If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, NetFriend Presence. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And Nathan, the Blues finished a three-game homestand, two wins, one loss, but the wins and losses aren't really what people are talking about right now. It's Jordan Binnington getting pulled from the game against Anaheim, 10 and a half minutes in. Him and Jim Montgomery exchange words as he leaves the ice. We talked to both of them. They all say it's good and moved on. What'd you make of the whole situation?
These are guys who are fiery competitors, both of them. You know, I think you mentioned it in your story, both reporting, you know, the exchange and the squashing of said beef, you know, but these things happen. You know, this is, in fact, this is not the first time that these two have kind of gone at each other a little bit. The last time Montgomery was with Dallas, you might remember, you know, and so no big deal. And, you know, the other thing is that both of these guys are, they're adults, they're professionals, and you put it behind you. The big thing I thought was coming out, you know, immediately after the game and the next day and saying, you know, I love him. You know, this is, it's not just, you know, Montgomery's making a change because he thinks a change is necessary, but he's not giving up on the player. He's just giving up on the particular situation, you know, and I think it's important to reinforce that for the player. And I think Binnington was receptive to that, which is great. So, you know, I think it's probably some tensions boiling over from the way the season has gone, and not just for Binnington, for everybody really. And those things are going to happen, but I don't know. It could be a good thing. You know, maybe it's the kind of thing that sparks a little unity.
Yeah, it's funny. I had kind of forgotten about that minor exchange, I guess, in 2019. Yeah. That was during the playoff series when Binnington got one of the weirdest penalties I think I've ever seen for slashing Ben Bishop. So he slashed the opposing goaltender as he was going off the ice, as they were by the bench. And then there was kind of the back and forth in the press, and ends with Jordan Binnington saying, "Who is Montgomery?"
So Montgomery says this and that. He said, "Who's Montgomery?"
It's like, that's crazy. It's 6 years ago. They've been together for now more than a year as head coach, and, you know, a couple of years as an assistant. I know it's a different sort of relationship there, but kind of crazy thing about the time that's passed there. And as far as the Anaheim game, you know, I think those two goals were not good ones to give up, obviously. Yeah. There was two kind of really bad angle shots that don't really have a chance of going in, and they both go in. And I think anyone that can read lips somewhat decently saw Jim Montgomery's reaction on the bench as well. When he looked up at the video board, he saw the goals go in, and there was a little bit of profanity in there. And then he pulled Jordan Binnington. So I think it was clear to see where he was thinking on that. And, you know, even when we talked to Jordan Binnington yesterday, he did not speak after the game on Monday. They did not make him available. And so we talked to him yesterday, one day after the whole thing. And he was like, yeah, I mean, I couldn't really pick up the puck on the McTavish one, the Minchikov one kind of beat me clean. And so I think he understands that they weren't good goals to give up, but I think he also wanted to battle through it. He thought that he maybe deserved to kind of stay in the game and to get a chance at least to right the ship and bounce back. Cause That's really all you want at that moment. You realize you're giving up two goals, but it's not like when the Blues have pulled goalies earlier in the season, It's been, I think Bennington giving up four in Washington, Hofer giving up, I believe it was three against Utah, but that was also on the heels of getting pulled against Chicago when he gave up a lot. So the pure quantity of the goals weren't there to kind of fall in line with taking him out, but it was more so the quality of them that Jim Montgomery was maybe not upset about, but just disappointed in.
Well, and Montgomery said after the game too, you know, there have been times earlier in the season where we've had to make these decisions, and I feel like I've made a mistake in not making them early enough, and I don't want to be the one, you know, putting us in a position where we're kind of behind the eight ball, right? So, you know, getting Bennington out of there early seemed to have worked, right? I mean, Hofer came in, was fantastic through the rest of the game. And, you know, I think that it's not really a change in approach, right? But maybe a change in urgency. And that's a result of where the rest of the season has gone or how the rest of the season has gone.
Yeah, and you know, the goaltending wasn't good in October. I think we've talked about that plenty. In November, they've been pretty decent. I mean, we can look at Joel Hofer shutting out Buffalo, Joel Hofer shutting out Utah. Even in the four games that Bennington had leading into this Anaheim one, he used a .915 save percentage, .244 goals against average. He was a plus 4.7 in goals saved above expected, according to Money Puck. So, like, those are really good numbers for about 2 weeks heading into that game. And I wonder if in the back of his mind, he says, you know what, I would understand this in October when I wasn't playing well. But now I am playing well. I've kind of built up some more goodwill to fight through this and kind of get things back on track. And, you know, when I asked him about it yesterday, about that, basically that same question, do you believe the last four games built up enough goodwill that you deserve to be able to fight through it? He said, you know, honestly, I'm not even thinking about that. It's just, you know, I was unhappy getting pulled, and that's the reaction that happened. So whether that's truthful or not, I don't know, but it is something that I was thinking about because he had been playing well heading into the game.
Yeah, I think the opposite end of that, though, is, you know, you talked about what might be in Bennington's head. You know, if you're Jim Montgomery and you look up and you see those two goals, that, you know, quality of the chances, to your point, I think you reported yesterday that they had a combined expected, yeah, 0.05. Like, that's unacceptable.
Yeah. So, and I think the Matavis shot was 0.01 and the Michkov was 0.04. So for listeners, it's basically a 1% chance of going in on the Matavis shot, a 4% chance of going in on the Michkov shot. And basically, if you think about them, what are the odds of them both going in? That's what, like 0.4%, if I'm doing my math correctly.
Again, we agreed there would be no math here, at least for me. So
maybe it's 0.04%. I don't know. It's little.
It's absurd. Yeah. And then I think that's the thing, right? It's like Montgomery, when he looked up and started swearing, to your point, you know, he saw what everybody else was able to see, and that's that these two easy goals. This looks like a guy who's not locked in. Let's get out of here now. Let's bail now and get in the hot hand. And as good as Bennington's been in November, Hofer has been better.
Yeah, and you know what? To Montgomery's credit, like, he made the move when, you know, he thought that the Blues still had a chance to win the game. And Hofer kind of did give him a chance to win the game. You know, we talked about Bennington's numbers in the last four starts. This is Hofer since the beginning of November. This is heading into that Ducks game. So there's an 8-game stretch. 918 save percentage, 226 goals against. You know, it's crazy to see where his numbers are at right now at 887, 311.
Yeah.
It's like a closer who gives up a grand slam in like the first outing of the year, and it'll just take
That's a great analogy.
Forever for his ERA to get back to respectability.
Yeah, he's a guy who didn't sign until like February, got a late start to spring, so then his April's a little rough. Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, I mean, he had that seven-goal outing against Chicago, the three-goal outing against Utah, that five goals against Pittsburgh. Like, that was his uphill battle there. And basically, since that game in Columbus, he gives him a chance to win there. He shuts out Buffalo. You know, I did find it really, really weird and odd, to be quite honest, that it wasn't Hofer going back in against the Ducks. This was something that Jim Montgomery talked about at the beginning of the month after Hofer shut out the Sabres, that if you get a shutout, you get rewarded with the net start. You just ride the hot hand and see how they go. And so given that logic, you would have thought that Hofer, he shuts out Utah. It wasn't a heavy workload. He had 18 shots. And you thought he was going to start against the Ducks, but he didn't. And so we asked Jim Montgomery after the game, you know, why didn't Hofer start? And he had a shutout last game. And his response was, well, last time he had a shutout and then we started the next game, we lost. And so this time we didn't want to do that again. And the Seattle game is the one that they lost. And I don't think we need to rehash that Seattle game much. Yeah. It was that controversial goaltender interference call at the end of regulation that sent the game into overtime, and then the Blues lost in overtime. So are we, what, like 2 seconds away from the Blues winning that game? And then what are we doing here? What are we talking about? You know?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it like that, but that is interesting. And giving the timing of all this, just feels everything all feels kind of interconnected. You know, that there's maybe some, I don't know how you would say it, right? Like instability, but is not really the right word, right? Because they're playing pretty well, but there seems to be some, I don't know, confusion. I can't find the right word, but there is something mystery surrounding the goalies, I guess.
Yeah. You know, and it is good to see, for if you're a Blues fan, to see Hofer do what he's doing right now. You know, the fact that he has been able to rebound so well, to be so successful in the month of November, after a pretty horrible October. And, you know, there's always the trade whispers around Jordan Binnington about, you know, whether he's interested in waiving a no trade, a partial no trade clause that he has, or whether the Blues are shopping him. And in whatever scenario unfolds in that situation, like, Joel Hofer is the option, right? Unless you're getting the goalie back in the other way. And to see him kind of perform that way bodes well, not only for this year, but, you know, for the future when he does kind of overtake Binnington for that number one spot. I don't think it's a coincidence that their contracts expire at the same time. Binnington becomes a UFA at the same time, Hofer becomes an RFA, and that seems like a natural point to kind of pass the torch. But if the Blues are truly in, you know, trade discussions or rumors or talks, whatever you want to deem it, because of their results this season, it also bodes well now.
Yeah, Binnington is a guy who would draw a lot of interest too. And, you know, the other thing is that it kind of makes that losing Colton Ellis in the offseason sting a little more. You know, if you were to move Binnington, you know, you don't have a third option that you feel comfortable with, ready to go at this point.
Yeah, but they didn't feel comfortable with him in the preseason. Like, that's why they got waived, right?
Sure. But if you are waving a white flag because you've moved on from Binnington, I don't think you need to feel that comfortable with him. You just need to feel comfortable with him as your next guy. And I guess you're right that, you know, if they left it up to chance, that they didn't feel like he was the next guy behind Hofer. But
Yeah, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I would politely disagree.
you can angrily disagree. It's all right.
Yeah, just, I mean, I don't think anyone expected him to get claimed. And just the like roster timing of it all, it would have required just a different level of knowledge and of the future, really. So like when they waived him,
that's what it would have
taken. When they waived him, it was one day before rosters reduced. Like that was the last day that they could waive him. They didn't have any roster spots. They weren't going to carry three goalies. No one carries three goalies really, except for the Sabres, I guess. And then, like Oscar Sundquist goes down with an injury, and in theory, you're like, okay, there's a roster spot right there. But in that moment, in about 2 hours from when he gets hurt in practice until when waivers are happening at 1 o'clock, you'd have to know that he's out for a week and that Colton Ellis is in danger of getting claimed in order to keep Colton Ellis on the NHL roster. I've seen it from fans, and I get pretty fired up because in my mind, a nonsensical thing to think that they should have kept him when like there was no
real. They shouldn't have kept him. I don't mean to suggest that. I mean, it was the right move to do what they did, and is still the right move now. Yeah, I'm just saying, if you get to a point where you are ready to wave the white flag and move Binnington, slide Hofer into your true number one spot, you need a backup option, you know, unless you get a goalie back, to your point, right? And, you know, if we're talking about them getting to the point where they're, you know, rumors or talks or whatever it is about that, I'm just saying the move, right or wrong, I think it was the right move. Just stings a little to not have an option you might be ready to go with in that case.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
And the Blues have gone through a rash of injuries right now. It seems like every day there's something new. A few days ago, we found out Pius Suter dealing with a lower body injury that's forced him to miss two games. The good news on him is that Jim Montgomery believes that he will be back for Thursday's game in Boston. Of course, Jimmy Snuggerud had surgery on his left wrist, is expected to be out 6 weeks. Alexei Torbchenko labeled week to week with, this was directly from the release, scalding burns on his legs from a home accident. And then Nathan Walker, he blocks a 92-mile-an-hour shot from Radko Gudas on Monday, suffers an upper body injury that is holding him out for 8 weeks. So that's four forwards right there. I mean, this was just a few weeks ago. We were looking at, this was a team with basically 15 forwards with Neighbors coming back and Texier still on the roster. And now suddenly they're down to, I guess it would have been 11 or so, whatever, and they call up Alexandre Kostromaki. So there is a lot going on with the Blues forward, and so much so that Tyler Tucker even took one shift as a forward the other night in his very limited playing time against the Ducks. So really a tough timeline for the Blues right now.
Yeah, the thing about those injuries, man, is it's up and down the lineup. It's not like you're creating one hole. You've got holes everywhere, you know. And you look at like a Walker and a Torbchenko. Those are identity guys. They're physical guys. They're, you know, the type who can really kind of spur some excitement with your team. It's hard to replace that, you know, especially being further down in the lineup than, say, like Snuggerud, you're going to have a different kind of depth stepping in there, you know, and then losing a Snuggerud, the offensive, the loss in offense you take there is just, is rough. You know, not to mention slowing him down at a key point in his development for a few weeks, which is, you know, a few weeks relative to a career is not a big, a big deal, but can be a little rough early on, you know. And then you look at Suter, who we expect back, but, you know, his presence has been missed the last couple of games. It's one of those things where, like I said, the depth at the bottom is going to have to step up to fill some of those roles, like Walker and Toropchenko, but the pressure gets higher, you know, on Thomas, Kyrou, Buchnevich, those guys who have so far not performed the way they did in past seasons and now will be relied on even more with some of their helpers gone.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, because you could always count on Toropchenko, Sundqvist, Walker to go out there and give you a good shift. No matter what's going on in the game, you can kind of count on them to bang around and maybe cause some havoc. Maybe get in on the forecheck, cause a turnover, get a scoring chance, hit some people, and go back to the bench with a little bit of juice. That's not really going to be the case. Matthew Joseph can bring some of that. Obviously, Oscar Sundqvist is still around, so he can still do that. When we talked about Nick Bjugstad on a previous episode, like, this is kind of what I'm getting to, is that that's not his identity. That's not his.
Yeah.
That's not who he is. That is a physical player. He doesn't bring that presence. Yes, he's big, he's long, he's got a little bit of offensive skill to his game, but he's not going to be a guy that goes around banging bodies and kind of crashing into the boards at all costs. And so you lose that physicality. You hope that Joseph, and maybe to a lesser extent Alexandre Kostomaki, can bring it a little bit. He is a guy who thinks defense first, but it is, I think, true defending rather than being physical and right, doing it that way. You know, he's a guy that management coaches have said, hey, you need to think more offensively. You need to be taking a little more risk. You need to have that in your game. You not just be a purely defensive guy. So that's the type of guy that they have recalled from Springfield. Obviously, he does have a little bit of offense to his game in the minors, but not sure how much that's going to translate to the NHL at this point in his career. So they do have guys that are filling in, but it is a tough spot to be in. That's a lot of guys that you kind of, you counted on being in your opening night lineup and were in your opening night lineup, and suddenly they're not.
Opening night lineup is really hard to say.
Opening night lineup. I think I just messed it up that time.
Oh, you know what? I was trying to give you a pass, but if you're
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Throw yourself under the bus.
Yeah, I'm being hard on myself now. So it is impacting their depth a little bit, and what happens moving forward, we'll see how the minutes are distributed as well, because these are guys who have been in and out of the lineup. Joseph, Bjugstad, and even, you know, Kostomaki was in the AHL, so it's not like they're maybe going to be counted on for the 12 to 13 minutes that fourth line previously got. Maybe we're talking in the, you know, 9-10 minutes, and then suddenly you're giving a minute to the other three lines and asking them to do more. So this is something that Jim Montgomery mentioned in talking about the injuries, is the condensed schedule. I mean, with the Olympics, I think we're all pretty excited about the prospects of best-on-best international hockey in Italy later this year, or excuse me, two months. So that's good, but the fact that they squeeze that tournament in during the season impacts the rest of the schedule, and you've seen a lot of games in a short amount of time. And it's something we talked about with the minutes on defense, that they can't just keep giving the top four a ton of minutes, and they've kind of been able to distribute a little bit more since they've called Mayhew back up, put Fowler with him, put Tucker with Falk or Kessel with Falk, depending on the night, and be able to distribute the minutes a little bit more on defense. I think we might run into something like that with the forwards and having fringe guys play more often.
Yeah, I think you're going to see guys, You know, I think like a Thomas, you know, he's going to take on more minutes, you know, and I mentioned that pressure rising on guys like that. It's not just, you know, mental pressure. It's not just, you know, noise. It's physical pressure, too. Those guys are going to be gassed, you know, over the course of the next few weeks. And, you know, I hope they're working on conditioning and practice, because it's just going to get tougher from here for a while. You know, we saw recently, you know, what, like Broberg, for example, what his legs looked at the end of a legs look like at the end of a game. And man, I hate to think of how Thomas's legs are going to be hurting by the end of the next few games.
Yeah, and we look ahead to this Nets road trip, a little bit of a reunion road trip. Jim Montgomery going back to Boston, Logan Mayhew going to Montreal. You know, we're going to have more on Jim Montgomery going back to Boston with our guest. It's Connor Ryan. He's a Bruins beat writer for Boston.com. And, you know, he talks a lot about Jim Montgomery's time there. And do bear with us. There were a slight technical difficulties in recording it. So I've done my best to try to mitigate it, but it is still there. We just thought it was good enough information to still include it and just kind of allow you the decision to listen to it. So yeah, Jim Montgomery going back to Boston. He was there for two plus years. And then he got hired by the Blues, and this is his first trip back there. So it'll be interesting to see what the reception's like there and kind of how he's treated by fan base and Nets players and whatnot.
Yeah, I think it'll be a little bit of a little bit bittersweet for him, right? And I think it could be the kind of thing that either way the game goes could feel like a little bit of a vindication for either side, right? You know, the Bruins may end up feeling like they did the right thing letting Montgomery go, and the Blues and Montgomery may feel like they did the right thing and bringing, you know, that partnership together in St. Louis. So, you know, I think it can do a lot for the feelings, you know, in the locker room and in the season. So I hope that the Blues can get a lot out of it. The Mayhew trip's a little bit different, but I think, you know, he and Bolduc meeting for the first time since that trade will generate a lot of talk online, good, bad, and otherwise.
Yeah, you're right. It is different. I mean, we're talking about Mayhew as a third pair defenseman, Bolduc as a third pair or a third line forward. Like, the fact that their minutes will be limited, and then even then, their minutes will be limited against each other. I'm sure they will see the ice together, but it's not the same as Jim Montgomery going back, particularly because Logan Mayhew only played eight games, I think, with Montreal. Yeah. You know, Jim Montgomery was the leader of the best season in NHL history in his first year there. And as you'll hear in our conversation with Connor, a little bit of controversy with his decisions and whatnot. So, Nathan, I think that does it on my end, right?
That's all my notes. And we worked through opening night lineup. So we got, yeah, I think we're all set. Yeah.
Yeah, tough word to say. If you're listening, just try saying it, and then you'll realize that, yes, you too can say opening night lineup. So without further ado, I guess, here's our guest, Connor Ryan. And we're pleased to be joined by Connor Ryan of Boston.com, Bruins beat writer there, here to talk about Jim Montgomery and his return to Boston this week. Connor, thanks for hopping on, especially after a late night last night.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's start big picture with Jim Montgomery and his time as coach of the Bruins. How would you characterize the Jim Montgomery era there?
Complicated, maybe, Matt, is the right word. Yeah. Bit of a roller coaster as far as just going from a guy that jumps in his first year and obviously plays a key role in a record-setting season. A guy that was a departure from Bruce Cassidy, a guy who obviously had a ton of success with this team. But I think his, you know, messaging, his intensity maybe wore thin after, you know, 5+ years on the job. And Montgomery and his approach, which is a lot more player friendly, a lot more, you know, maybe personal, a lot more emotionally tied into the players, let alone his tweaks, I think, to their systems, which I think were a little bit overdue. It was that breath of fresh air that helped take a competitive team, a team that obviously had Patrice Bergeron and Krejci and all these star players, they had a lot of talent on paper, but it seemed like it all kind of rolled into a perfect storm. And I think he played a key part in that. And then it all kind of unraveled down the stretch, right? And a lot of things, you know, by the same token of it being a perfect storm, a lot went wrong at the worst possible time in that first round series against Florida. But I also think, you know, some of the decisions that Jim Montgomery made during that stretch, whether it's, you know, breaking up the goalie rotation between Jeremy Swayman and Linus Ullmark, a few roster tweaks during that seven game series, a lot of it kind of loomed large. The Bruins and Jim Montgomery in the spot where, you know, he goes into next year, but you do wonder how much the faith in the management staff was kind of shaken a little bit by what played out in that series against Florida. So he sticks around for another year. They kind of exceed expectations. They were kind of the Moneyball Bruins. They lost a lot of guys. They signed in a lot of value contracts and end up being competitive, get to the second round. But you go into that final year of Jim Montgomery's contract, he's a lame duck head coach. You look at kind of the baseline results, the production that he's been able to put together with the Bruins, and you're like, all right, this guy deserves another extended look here when you look at just the string of success that he's had. And whether it's the Bruins and Montgomery couldn't come to terms on a contract, and I do know they talked about a contract but couldn't bridge the gap there, or whether it's, you know, we're working on a contract, but we still want to see a little bit more from you. And obviously everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong last year, whether it's injuries, Jeremy Swayman and the contract holdout, all that stuff, how much obviously it weighs on a coach to be a lame duck head coach there, where obviously the margin for error is pretty slim. And it all kind of ends this roller coaster with, you know, him being out after 20 plus games with the Bruins. So it's a really interesting, you know, 2+ year stretch for the Bruins and Montgomery, a guy that took them to new heights and then in short order was kind of cast aside.
Yeah. How much of his tenure do you just attach with goaltending? Like whether it's how good it was in that 135 point season, the goaltending decisions in the playoffs that year, the Swayman holdout last year, like how much of Jim Montgomery's tenure in Boston is tied to just the goaltending storyline?
Yeah, I think it plays a huge part, right? When you just look at how, you know, Jeremy Swayman and Linus Ullmark were the backbone of that team. Yeah, the team was galvanized by, obviously, I think they were well aware that was kind of a last dance kind of season for guys like Bergeron and Krejci. You want to play for those guys. But the Bruins, why they were so successful, they just never really hit a rut because, all right, you have the one off game where, you know, Swayman or Ullmark gives up 4 goals. You turn to the other guy the next game and you kind of stop the bleeding. And I think it was definitely unconventional as far as how they utilized that workload. And I think credit goes to Montgomery and the Bruins goalie coach Bob Asenza for kind of mapping out that unorthodox workload between the two of them. But it worked until it didn't, right? Until you get to the playoffs where whether it's just the fact that you can, you know, utilize that kind of game plan over an 82-game season, but maybe it changes in the playoffs, right? What happens if you go into game one, you win, game two, your goalie has a bad game, and you go into game one, your goalie has a shutout. Do you not go to him in game two, right? It does get, you start to overthink things, and you know, the circumstances kind of change a little bit once you get to the playoffs, and the Bruins kind of shifted from that script, right? You had Ullmark play, 6 straight games? He was nursing some sort of injury down the stretch there. Had that OT gaffe against Matthew Tkachuk in game 5, gives up 6 goals in game 6. And then you turn to Swayman in game 7. No pressure, buddy, right? You haven't played in 2 weeks, but you got to keep our record-setting season alive on home ice. And he did a serviceable job, but wasn't nearly good enough. You look at how that was handled, the fact that afterwards Jim Montgomery in his post-game presser deferred to goalie Bob, is what they call him, for the quotes. Not what you want to hear, probably as a Bruins fan after a loss like that. But it does hold a lot of weight over, I think, how things played out. And to your point, you look at where things went off the rails this past season where the Bruins just couldn't get out of their own way. If you're Jim Montgomery and you're on the last year of your contract and what they've been able to do so well over his first years was start really strong, right? Give yourself a little bit of breathing room. You have Jeremy Swayman, who isn't there during training camp, signs the day before their season starts and then is obviously pretty slow out of the gate and just couldn't get into a rhythm. If you're a head coach, you're panicking, right? Like you have the safety blanket here and now you're pretty much bleeding points because he's not ready to go and he can't get into a rhythm. I think when you look at Jim Montgomery's overall tenure here, you have to look at the goaltending as something that holds a lot of weight over what went well and what went wrong.
Yeah, and you mentioned his personality, his demeanor, and that's something that we see every day in St. Louis. It's kind of a lighter mood for the most part. I mean, after games, it can be a little bit snarly, but even last night, you know, he pulls Jordan Bennington after giving up two goals in the first 10 and a half minutes. They bark at each other as he's leaving the ice. And then in the post game, Jim Montgomery says, "Yeah, I said I love you. He said I love you too." And like, that's just kind of who he is, right? That's the sense of humor who he is. Now, obviously a departure from what Bruce Cassidy brought. And how did the players kind of react to Jim Montgomery's personality? Because when he comes in there, it's a veteran room that really knows how to run things themselves.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do think it was that breath of fresh air as far as, you know, Bruce Cassidy, obviously, he's a really established coach. Great to talk to if you're a media person. My God, that dude will talk your ear off about, like, the weather if you ever have a chance to talk to Bruce. But definitely pretty intense, pretty blunt, very demanding as far as what he wants every single day as far as the structure. He's tough on especially younger players. And I think that probably is what resonated a lot with, you know, as much as that was a veteran room with the Bergerons, the Krejcis, the Foligno's, the Machians, you had a lot of those ancillary pieces there on that 22-23 team, especially, that you needed them to all pull on the rope to be the team that they were. You're looking at a Jake DeBrusque, right? A Brandon Kahlo, some of these other younger players who I think either stagnated or the messaging from Bruce Cassidy was kind of wearing thin. So I think you bring in a guy like Jim Montgomery who has that magnetic personality, the guy that I think probably makes going to the rink fun, right? And I think that resonated with the younger players. You get the buy-in there. And I think it's probably just for a veteran player, you know, Brad Martian's a guy who Bruce Cassidy coached him in Providence. Like, I think he's used to the tough love and all those things. But when you change up and you have a guy that is really different in the room, a guy that brings that different kind of energy day in and day out, yeah, it's a nice change of pace, right? It changes things up. You're already kind of energized with Patrice and Krejci and all those guys back, and now you've got a guy who has his wits about him that has his own kind of style of hockey. You know, he changed their approach offensively as well. They're much more of a puck possession, quality over quantity, shot volume approach. Like, all those things kind of blended together to make them a team that really kind of just hit their stride right out of the gate. They were kind of like Colorado this year, where I think they got their second regulation loss. It felt like it was like Christmas time at that point.
Yeah, and when we look at the end of his time in Boston, from reading the stories from Bruins beat writers like yourself, it kind of felt like the St. Louis connection was maybe there before even he was fired. Like, how is that viewed in the area?
Yeah, it definitely, as far as the quick turnaround. And again, it's not, I think, a surprise in the NHL when coaches kind of, you know, hit the ground running. It's never a surprise when a guy, especially a guy who has won the Jack Adams, has had all that success, gets picked up. He obviously had those ties. There was sort of the questions as far as how quickly that did come together afterwards, right? Where you look at just how quickly things went off the rails here in Boston. And he has those ties to St. Louis before, the team that, you know, took a chance on him after his time with Dallas. So it makes a lot of sense. But I don't know if you buy into, like, the whether, you know, he had that as kind of the backup plan all along. But also, if you are a head coach and you are on the last year of your deal and you're trying to gut your way through the start of a year where nothing seems to be going your way, you're swimming against the tide, whether it's, you know, guys being injured, Swayman, you know, not playing to his level. It just felt like, you know, Jim Montgomery and the Bruins were desperate just to get any sort of traction at all, and it wasn't working out. So if you're, you know, you can be a coach, you can say the contract that bothered me, you can say you're just focused on the day-to-day. You don't, right? You're stressed about it. You're stressed about where you're going to be if the results don't start adding up. So I think it's only natural to assume, like, you know, what is the next step for a guy like Jim Montgomery during that stretch where it felt like he had no answers. Like, the Bruins weren't executing, the talent wasn't there, a lot of guys' games dropped off. And if you're Jim Montgomery, right, you have to, I think, shift and see what's the next shoe that's going to drop. Sure enough, it was the Bruins cutting ties with him pretty early on in the year, and the opportunity presented itself with St. Louis.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Yeah, I think that's what surprised me the most when he got hired by the Blues was that it was a 5-year contract.
Yeah.
Like it was through the end of last season, this one, and then three more after that. And like, I think if you're the Bruins front office and you say, well, we fire him, we still got to pay him for the rest of that season. It's only one season. Whereas a lot of these other teams that are firing coaches are, well, got to pay him for two more years or whatever. Right. And then it ends up, they probably don't have to pay much at all because you got hired immediately. So it didn't really seem like there was much, much to lose, so to speak, from a Bruins perspective.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think from their perspective, right, they were talking contract during the offseason. They couldn't really find a landing spot, but I also think probably from the Bruins, it's almost like, you know, this is our term, this is our contract. You can accept it or not. If you, you know, take this team that is losing more pieces, a team that is continuing to kind of be in this roster retool, but also a team that the Bruins had pretty high expectations going to next year. It was almost like everyone thought that 23-24 was going to be the year the bill came due for a team that has been trading all these first round picks, that has been in that win now window. And you sign, you know, the Kevin Shattenkirks, the Van Riemsdyks, all these kind of veteran guys, and they are a competitive group. So you go into, you go out of that season, you beat Toronto in the first round again. You lose to the Florida Panthers, but it was a pretty competitive six-game series.
Swayman really kind of stood tall. So if you're the Bruins, you're like, all right, we've got Jeremy Swayman,
who looks like a number one. We're going to give him that contract eventually. It wasn't easy, but they eventually gave him that contract. But you also have a lot of cap space. So, all right, what were our biggest flaws? We obviously don't have a top six center. We sign Elias Lindholm. We bring in a physical defenseman like Nikita Zadorov. All right, we're ready to build off of what we thought was going to be our bridge year. And then everything kind of, you know, went to hell pretty pretty quickly there. So I think for the Bruins, if Jim Montgomery and that group started off strong once again, maybe they shift their approach. Maybe they up the dollar value, or they're like, all right, you know, this guy can roll with the punches, right? We're still a little weary about how that 22-23 season ended, which I think it had to have weighed on, I think, the Bruins management as far as like, man, this was our one shot. And again, it falls on the players, but also I think Jim Montgomery and those second guesses did loom large. I do wonder how much that was maybe the poison pill or thing that kind of soured the Bruins as far as like, no, we still like you, Jim, but, you know, we're not going to just hand out a new contract extension right away.
Last year, I'm just playing a little bit of devil's advocate, right? I look at this roster and outside of Pastrnak, you know, Morgan Geekie's having a great year this year, obviously. But, you know, last year, 57 points was the second leading scorer on the team. You know, Marchand misses some time hurt. Lindholm has a down year. Like, it just, McAvoy's hurt for a decent chunk. It didn't seem like there was a roster there that should have had the expectations that maybe there were, you know? So, like, and even, you know, looking at Sacco's record, it was worse than Montgomery's, right? Like, so it didn't seem like it was a coaching problem, but if it was time, it was just time. Like, I don't.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think you look at almost like the Bruins thought that all the guys that overachieved in 23-24, right? Like, you lose Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci, and naturally the mood for Bruins fans is like, holy crap, you know, we have no centers in the pipeline. And then Charlie Coyle and Pavel Saka both end up having at least 60 point seasons, right? And you're like, oh, this is easy. I didn't realize you can just find these like top six guys like out of nowhere. And then what happens? Like, Saka was a little bit banged up last year, but his play dropped off a little bit. And then Charlie Coyle just really couldn't find his game. So you're already kind of rudderless there. As you said, like, they're pretty one dimensional as far as relying on Pastrnak to be the guy. And again, the fact that he had nearly 50 goals and 100 plus points on that team is still nuts.
Oh, he was on my heart ballot. He was on my heart ballot.
He's unbelievable. But then I think a lot of it just ties into the goaltending just not being there, right? You move on from Linus Ullmark and you expect Jeremy Swayman to be the guy that he was during that playoff run, right? Like he's the reason why they beat a much more talented Toronto team in the first round, and the reason why the Bruins at least made it somewhat competitive against obviously the eventual Stanley Cup champion Panthers as well. You were expecting maybe not a 930 save percentage Jeremy Swayman, but definitely not a 892 save percentage. I think even contrast it to this season, right? The Bruins are in the mix. They're clearly, I think, a competitive team under Marco Sturm this year. You peek under the hood at the numbers, they're not that great. They take a lot of penalties. They're, I think, one of the last teams in expected goals. But what's been the difference? It's been Jeremy Swayman's playing like a legit top five goalie again. And if Jeremy Swayman was doing that last year, if he was a league average goalie last year, the Bruins are probably still hovering in like the wild card picture by the time they kind of blew things up in March. You look at where they were when they traded guys like Marchand and Coyle and Kahlo and everyone, they were 2 points out of a wild card spot. Granted, they were kind of sandwiched with a lot of players, but it wasn't like they were already in the cellar and the Bruins had nothing else to do. I think clearly it just, they couldn't get going last year. And if you're Jim Montgomery and you're desperate to get results and kind of keep your job here in Boston, you look at the contract holdout with Swayman, the lack of results once he does get back, you have to be like, maybe St. Louis isn't so bad.
Yeah, and obviously there's all the personal connections he has in St. Louis. You know, he played here as a player. His wife is from St. Louis. When he got fired in Dallas, he moved to St. Louis. Like, he lived here before he even got hired by the Blues and as an assistant coach. Then obviously he has those few years as an assistant, gets to know Doug Armstrong a little bit. So like, there's a lot of St. Louis ties with Jim Montgomery on a personal level. And I think that's also why he was kind of, I don't know if adored is quite the right word, but like when the Blues got him, Blues fans were pretty excited to have him back because they saw what the special teams were like when he was an assistant here. They know that he loves the area. And, you know, it's true with myself. I married a St. Louis girl and now I live in St. Louis. Like he married a St. Louis girl. Now he lives in St. Louis. So I think there's a lot of personal stuff that kind of can bring him back here. And you know, the hockey side of how did you keep track of his line combinations? Because they are.
it was a blunder, I feel like, especially when you get to last season where nothing was going right. And I think just desperate to find any sort of spot, my God, it would be every single time I'd be looking up, I'd be like, that's not who Pasta is usually skating with. It's pretty impressive as far as how many times they juggled things around. And it's a bit of a departure from Marco Sturm this year, where it feels like he's a lot more set in his ways. He's had his third line together from, I think, the second game of the season till now, and he hasn't budged. And the results have been there, so I'll take it as a beat writer as far as keeping track on who's out there, but it was a whirlwind for sure.
Yeah, and when we look at Montgomery coming back to Boston, how do you think the reception is going to be like from fans or ex-players or just in the building in general?
Yeah, it's gonna be really fascinating, right? Like you look at the guys who have come back, and there's been a lot of returns to TD Garden this year because a lot of guys on here from this past season. But for Montgomery, it's I think probably a lot more complicated. Where you look at the results, you look at the role he played in a season that, you know, should be up there as far as one of the more memorable years in an original six franchise's history, right? Like the run they were on, the resiliency, the amount of guys that, you know, for as star laden as that group was, you had like Taylor Hall on your third line. It felt like every single guy bought in every single game. It wasn't just like, all right, here's the 2-goal game from Pasta every couple of days. It felt like there was the Nick Foligno game. It was the Hall game. It was the Tomáš Nosek game, right? Like all those guys were bought in. I don't think that happens without a guy like Jim Montgomery kind of bringing in that enthusiasm and that energy. So I do think he deserves to, you know, get his due for playing a key role in that. But Bruins fans were also very passionate. They tend to focus on the negatives before the positives. The Bruins fans look at Jeremy Swayman playing at this level right now, and they still want to talk about last year as opposed to what he's doing now. It's the Tuukka Rask routine is what he usually dealt with here. So I wonder if it's going to be a little bit more mixed, right? Where you can look at the achievements he's had, but again, the shortcomings for a team that has been entrenched in that win now mindset might make for a interesting, I think, reaction probably on Thursday night once he does get recognized on the video screen here at the Garden.
Yeah, I mean, what, Tuukka Rask is still to blame for that 2019 Cup final, right?
Oh my God! After that game, a game where let's remind everyone, the Bruins' best player in Game 7 of a Stanley Cup final on home ice was Joakim Nordstrom. Like, you're not going to win. Listen, we're not besmirching Joakim Nordstrom. Good fourth line grinder that year. You're not going to win a lot of championships if that's your best player out there. You know, yeah, it wasn't a good sign for the Bruins there.
Well, Connor, this is great. When I was emailing you before, I was reading you when you were covering Springfield back when I was covering Florida at the time, and they were an affiliate of the Panthers. So really cool to see kind of where we both come to at this point, and look forward to seeing you later this week in Boston.
Absolutely, Matt. Thanks for having me.
All right. For Nathan Mills, I'm Matt DeFrance. Thanks for listening to NetFront Presence.
Mientras los quienes de Villaquién reían y comían, el Grinch desde su guarida su plan definía. Pensó, ¿cómo arruinar sus cenas festivas? Y le vino una idea, de las más retorcidas. Salpicaré sus papitas de verde, con sazón de pepinillo. Y con esos feos calcetines, verán mi retorcido motivo. Así que si quieres probar lo que el Grinch preparó, ve a McDonald's y verás lo que tramó. El nuevo Grinch Meal, ya, en McDonald's. En McDonald's participantes hasta agotar existencias. Para pa pa pa. Mientras los quienes de Villaquién reían y comían, el Grinch desde su guarida su plan definía. Pensó, ¿cómo arruinar sus cenas festivas? Y le vino una idea, de las más retorcidas. Salpicaré sus papitas de verde, con sazón de pepinillo. Y con esos feos calcetines, verán mi retorcido motivo. Así que si quieres probar lo que el Grinch preparó, ve a McDonald's y verás lo que tramó. El nuevo Grinch Meal, ya, en McDonald's. En McDonald's participantes hasta agotar existencias. Para pa pa pa.